What if you could learn more about your health in under an hour? The Pronuvo Whole Body Scan gives you a comprehensive look at your health, screening for over 500 conditions, including many solid tumors as early as stage one. High-quality imaging, no radiation, no contrast. Book your scan today at Pronuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com. Gain clarity, confidence, and peace of mind with Pronuvo. Invest in your health today. Visit Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
Welcome to the Three Down Greencast. You are listening to the internet's only football turn curling podcast. I am Joel Gasson with John Fraser as usual. As yes, this is our annual 8-End Nation episode as we talk about all things curling. I don't really know what we're going to talk about. It has not been an eventful couple of weeks at all.
No, not at all.
Nothing happened. There was no finger poke of doom. There was no gold medal in one of the best games I think either of us have ever watched. And there was no remarkable comeback from the brink by one Rachel Homan. So we nothing to talk about there. And it's not. And if that wasn't enough, apparently the Brier starts this weekend. So, I mean, lots to get to, apparently, actually.
Lots to put in the veins of your curling action. Well, thankfully, we've also got a sponsor that will allow us to calm the nerves, that being the friends at Lucky Bastard Distilleries. Gas for the 8-End Nation with our very good friend of the program, way more talented than me, Mr. John Cullen. What's in the glass, buddy?
For me, I'm going to be honest, I forgot to stock the beer fridge before this.
That's like, that's a first in the, however many years of this podcast.
Well, I mean, Wednesday afternoon was a very weird time for us to record. And it was like, oh, I got home from work early because I was going to do this. And I was like, oh, yeah, I guess I didn't put anything. But there was, in the back of the fridge, a Lucky Bastard Saskatoon Berry no sugar iced tea. All the delicious flavor, no sugar, and still just great. Still good stuff. And it helps the sponsor, so why not, right?
Of course. No, and I mean, you absolutely can't go wrong with that. Myself, even though it is Wednesday afternoon, I am a degenerate.
We know that.
You can't. Of course. It is well established. Earlier this morning, I went and stocked up my liquor cabinet with a little bit of Lucky Bastard vodka. I tossed in some lemon, some Lucky Bastard bitters. I've got the bacon of the original. And that's the cocktail I'm going to be enjoying as we talk to Mr. Cullen.
Mm-hmm. So we're not going to waste any more time with this. Normally, we spend a whole whack of time talking about something nonsensical at this point, but we can't have John Cullen waiting any longer. So, John, let's get him on the line already, would you?
It is the annual edition of the 8-End Nation. We're no longer three down or 3-End Nation. Oh, John, I can't even get it right. The Greencast, Joel.
That's why we don't let you host.
Listen, it's all over the map. I'm frazzled because I couldn't get things started here. I've got curling on the brain. I screwed everything up to start with. As we have brought back a man that I think I now get starstruck because of how big he's become.
Oh, yeah, right.
Let's go with that. We've brought back John Cullen, award-winning podcaster. Have you won any awards for the book yet, John?
No. I don't think the book's going to win any awards. I'd be very surprised.
Curling Rocks is the book. John, I loved it. I loved every second of it. I can tell
Thanks,
you,
man.
I am wearing bell bottoms just for you.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Stretchy bell bottoms. Now, of course, the Olympics and the Scotties have come and gone. The Brier starts right away, as does Men's Saskatchewan Club Provincials.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
That's the real one I'm going to get you to pick here, John. But
okay.
I'm going to start us off with a spicy take, as I promised off air. We all know about Boopgate, and we'll probably discuss that on this very here platform. But my bold take, and Joel, you haven't heard this one, and both of you can disagree with me. I don't think Brad Jacobs and team win without the controversy of Boopgate. And I say this because this is a team that plays so well with a chip on their shoulder when they feel like they're the underdogs, when, quite frankly, when they're pissed off, that I think that was the extra little spice that they needed to go out and win gold.
It's interesting. I mean, I've said a few times, like, I think that there was no team more uniquely equipped to deal with that situation than them because of exactly what you said. I do agree. I think they do play better with a chip on their shoulder. I think I think they kind of had one anyway, or like they're the type of team, they're going to manufacture a chip on their shoulder if there's not one already there. It's like the teams that are always insisting they're the underdog, you know, the LA Dodgers or the, oh, we're the underdog, you know, the Jays.
Every football team ever. Yep.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Like everybody's always trying to be the underdog and they're kind of the team that would manufacture the chip on their shoulder. I think they were going into the Olympics going, everybody says we're too old. Everybody says Bruce Mowat's going to win, blah, blah, blah. Like they had already kind of set themselves up for this when they got to the Olympics. But yeah, I mean, I think most teams would have probably crumbled in the face of it. I mean, it was pretty crazy. I don't know if I would go so far as to say it's the only reason they won. I mean, I thought they were one of the best teams in the field coming in. I kind of thought basically the podium, I thought any of those three teams had a chance to win and every other team was kind of on the outside looking in. And then obviously, you know, with Nicklaus playing so poorly and, you know, that's a team that was not equipped to deal with it. I mean, I know they lose that game, they go to 0-3. So like, you know, you're probably dead at that point anyway. But then they go on to lose basically every other game after that to teams who are way worse than them. And it kind of showed that, not every team would have been able to deal with that. And like you said, I think Jacobs was in a position where not only could they deal with it, but it fueled them.
Certainly. And I still think they podium without it, but I just think, you know, between that and the Casper incident, the early celebration with the big shot by Brad, it's like, I really thought that they brought it from that point forward. Now, Boopgate itself. John, I'm sure you've explained this to lots and lots and lots of people. Frick, you've been on the national feed of the CBC explaining this, never mind it, to a couple of hacks that turn a mediocre football podcast into a curling one once a year. Uh-huh. I think it was overblown. I think, but again, as a curler, I mean, I said to people at work that asked me to explain it, that I don't think I ever thought about what my hand did after I let go of the rock until I saw that. Right. I think it was all a bit overblown. Now my question, and you mentioned it, that the Swedish team kind of imploded moving forward. Do you think Oscar regrets bringing it up in the way that he did? Because it seems like he brought that up. They fell apart. I mean, we've all been pissed off after giving up 4 in the 8th. I mean, hell, I've given up 4 lots of times, right? But do you think that Oscar's more to blame than he's being made out to be in this whole situation?
It's a good question. I think they definitely regret it. I mean, Nicklaus said as much, and I think he kind of tried to avoid it too, right? Like even when Oscar was going at the officials about it, you know, I don't know if Nick was sort of informed of the plan, you know, because I think whether or not Oscar is going to get raked over the coals for this or not, it's really hard to ignore the evidence of the timing. And I think they buried themselves on that. You know, if you're looking at it from a curling expert perspective, or not even an expert, but just someone who plays the game and knows that really that motion is not going to, it's not, number one, obviously it's not cheating. Number two, it's not really going to do anything to the rock. I think they kind of screwed themselves over a little bit because they came out after the game and they both said, well, Mark's been doing this forever. And so then, okay, if that's true and that's the case, why are you bringing it up at the Olympics? Like, to me, as a top level curler who has played the game against teams like this and has had on ice rule disputes before, it's impossible for me not to read it as intentional, the timing being intentional. And they said, oh, well, we have brought it up to World Curling before and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, even if that were true, you didn't do it in the middle of a game. You were both at the World Championships last year. Is the World Championships not an important tournament? Like, to me, the fact that you're admitting, we believe Mark has been doing this for years. And then the time you bring it up is in a game you're losing that you have to win, you know, and clearly trying to get him off his game. And then I think what people miss too, right, is so in the beginning, and I'll give Oscar credit for this, in the beginning, he's handling it properly. He goes to the officials. He says, hey, I think Mark Kennedy is double touching the stone. The officials say, okay, we'll come out and watch the hog line for 3 ends. That's protocol. They watch the hog line for 3 ends. They don't pull any more rocks. And then Oscar goes back at Mark, you know, because he's dissatisfied. The officials don't notice anything, or they refuse to call it, or whatever you want to say. And then Oscar goes back at Mark to basically be like, well, the officials let me down, so now I'm going to try and get in your head further by inciting you and saying, well, hey, you and Brett are both doing it and blah, blah, blah. So yeah, I think if they could go back in time, they would change how they acted, because obviously it had an effect on them. And I don't think it was the right time to do it. But also, you know, if they think they were serving some sort of greater good and the Olympics was the time to bring it up, to bring attention to the fact that curling probably needs stricter officiating, I guess fine. But yeah, ultimately, probably not the right time.
100%.
No, probably not. But I think that's kind of what it was. I don't know if there's much else to say about that at this point. I think for me, the other sort of lasting moment from these Olympic Games, especially on the men's side, since that's more what we're talking about right now, was that gold medal game. And I'm historically very bad at remembering games from the past. Like, come talk to me in the middle of a CFL season in like week 12, 14. I'm like, I don't remember what happened week one. So it's a very big grain of salt when I say this, that that was to me one of the best games I've ever seen in my life. Because of my memory for games, I can't say it's the best one I've ever watched. And there's certainly been a lot more curling that I haven't watched that I have watched in sort of the history of everything. But that game's just going to be impossible to forget for just how freaking good it was.
Yeah,
it was really good. I mean, I think I've gone on record and I've said, I think the 2022 gold medal game is the best curling game I've ever seen played. As far as shot making is concerned, you know, both Sweden and Great Britain were above 90%. You know, just the difficulty of the shots that both skips were making. It was really an incredible game. I think as far as the drama, this game had a little bit more, just because you saw some misses, not a ton. It was like the perfect combination of like, there was like the right number of misses where it created drama and intrigue, but there was still a ton of really good makes, you know, because I think that's the thing, right? People will say, well, I want there to be more misses in curling, or the game is too good and everybody blanks all the time and that's not very fun. It's like, I don't think you know what you're saying. Like, I agree that I think a game in which both teams are playing 100% is a boring game,
yeah.
But I don't think you want a lot of misses.
No.
Right? Like a lot of misses is not good for the game. So I thought, yeah, it had the perfect balance of that. And I thought the ninth end was so interesting. It really reminded me of 2018. Where it's just, again, it's like you can say all this, oh, Bruce was the world number one and Rachel was the world number one, and maybe they didn't play their best, but it's like the Olympics just makes guys like just blow their dicks off. And it was like, for some reason, it's just like, yeah, I got my gun in my holster and I'm just pulling the trigger right at my penis. Because in 2018, that's what Nicholas Adin did. For some reason, he was like in a game he was winning, or a tie game in eight or whatever. I can't remember if it's a tie game or they were down by one, but he just decides in the eighth end, I am either going to lose the game or win the game right now. And then lost the game in a very significant fashion, gave up five to Schuster. And then it was the same thing with Bruce. I mean, I think of Bruce as an incredible strategist. And the thing with Bruce that's always impressive to me is he has a very malleable strategy. And most of the time, skips who have a malleable strategy lose because they don't have a set game plan, right? Like Jacobs has a game plan. They want to control the hammer. They want to blank as many ends as possible. You know, that's their MO. Bruce is very malleable. But for some reason in the ninth end, he was like, we have to force in this end or we lose. So we're just going to play this, and we're going to play this strategy we don't normally play, because if we don't do it, we're going to lose. And then they're not only playing a more aggressive strategy, but then they miss every shot.
Yeah.
And then it costs them the game. So yeah, I don't know what it is about the Olympics, but it's it makes the game special for sure, and more intense than any other games we see.
On the line of Bruce Mowat, though, I mean, I think all of us on this podcast are big fans of the guy, both as a curler and a human being.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So even though we John and I, John Fraser and I, I'm sure we're both cheering for Canada to win that game because, you know, we're Canadian. it's still impossible not to feel a little gutted for Bruce. Like, I can't imagine having to go through that again, like, to lose back-to-back gold medal games probably has to hurt on a certain level compared to just losing the first one.
Oh, I mean, you could see it, right? The emotions were all there on the podium. I don't know if you saw the post-game interview that BBC Sport did, but, you know, Bruce kept it together on the podium and then couldn't handle it in the mixed zone after. And oh yeah, I mean, they were devastated, and how can you not be, right? I mean, you're the number one team in the world. On some level, you're even lucky to be there, you know. They probably shouldn't have even been in the playoffs. So then that's kind of the wild swing of emotions. You sneak into the playoffs, then Switzerland's beating the brakes off you, and then Bruce makes a crazy run, almost quad, to save your whole Olympics. So you're kind of just like, damn, it feels like we've been battling all week, but we still somehow found a way to give ourselves a chance to win gold. Then you lose it. And I think for Bruce too, you know, Ross White is a real contender this quad. And I think that that has to be playing a little bit in the back of their mind. I think there's two factors. I think the first factor is Ross White. They are in a place, and this is where Canadians have been forever. And I think, you know, you look at like teams like Anna Hasselborg or Nicholas Sedin or Yannick Schwaller, they know they're going to be at the next Olympics. Like, if they sign up, they're in, basically. Hasselborg a little less now that Vrano is getting good, but like for the most part, you know, I mean, Nicholas Sedin has had literally no competition for 2 decades in Sweden, none, zero. So there's a different element at play there. And I think Bruce kind of thought, maybe I'm in that zone too. I'm just going to strap him up and I'll be at the Olympics the next 5 quads. And Ross White and his team have gotten themselves to a point where there's no guarantee Bruce will be there in 2030. So I think that's one factor. I think the other factor is
Do the Scots just name a team? I don't know the process.
They name a team, but it's based on points. So it's not just like, ah, Bruce, you're better than Ross, you're going. They have like a point system that they laid out at the start of the quad, and Bruce beat Ross in basically every metric. So that's one factor. I think the other one too is they don't know if Grant's going to retire. So that's been kind of the scuttlebutt behind the scenes, that he's the only one who hasn't quite decided if he's going to play the next quad. I think he will. But I think ultimately he will, but I think that's some of what you were seeing there was the emotion of, we may not make it back to the next Olympics and we might not even have the same team going forward. So I think that's what you were seeing there in terms of like just how emotional they were.
Guys, I have a solution. I have a solution. We offer permanent residency to like Newfoundland for one of the two teams. I think
we've talked a long time that Bruce should just move to PEI, right? So
I mean, it's a short flight back home, right, John? I mean, we might as well bring one of them into the mix. The men's game is in flux. Alberta's a little tough, you know. Saskatchewan's might be wide open in the next quad, so I think we just move into Newfoundland, right, boys?
Saskatchewan's already wide open, buddy.
Yes.
If Kelly Knapp wins the provincials, it's wide open.
That is
no disrespect to Kelly Knapp, but the guy doesn't leave Saskatchewan. So if he's beating your best team, it's probably not great for the sport in general.
Yeah.
Well, the best team that hadn't already qualified, but yes.
Well, yeah, for sure. He doesn't beat McEwen, but Clayder should have probably taken care of business there.
Oh, a spicy tease for when we get into Breyer talk. I just want to keep it on the Olympics, and especially you've talked about the moment. You've talked about curlers shooting themselves in the dick. How about Rachel, right? We have to talk about Rachel. We're all noted members of the Holman Empire. Mm-hmm. I love Team Holman. I love their intensity. I love everything. And everybody that goes around saying, oh, she needs to smile more, just shut the fuck up. Like, let's call a spade a spade. Like, oh, she doesn't smile. I heard that so often. This Olympics, just shut the fuck up, okay? Oh, she's intense. She's a great competitor, and she's one of the best of all time. How good was her comeback in this Olympics? Like, Joel and I were texting going, oh, shit. Like, it's not it's happened to her again. We expected this. We called this, but more of a like, oh, my God, I can't believe this is happening to her again. She's so good. How big is that bronze medal for her, John?
Yeah, it's huge. And just if I may, can I talk about hockey for one quick second?
Yes, of course you can.
Obviously, so depressing that we didn't win the gold, got the silver medal. But can't help but think if Connor McDavid just smiled more, we probably would have won the gold, boys.
So, yes, John Cullen, I fucking love you.
So I don't. I mean
that would require a hockey player showing personality.
The way he looked at that, stuffed animal. I mean, that's not a winner. You know what I mean? No, that's not a winner. So that was obviously brutal to see. But yes, here's my sort of like outreach theory, my galaxy brain theory is like this bronze, I think, will help her win in 2030 if she gets there. It's like this weird. It's this weird thing, man. Like, yeah, to me, look, I think two things can be true. Obviously, bronze is a disappointing result based on the last couple of years. You know, back-to-back world champion with basically the same teams in the field. You fed Tirinzoni her lunch the last 2 years. You fed Anna Hasselborg her lunch the last 2 years. Like, she was 10-1 against Hasselborg in the last 2 years and 19-3 against Tirinzoni in the last 2 years.
Wow.
Going into the Olympics. So, like, yes, like, two things can be true. Number one, ultimately, bronze is a bit of a disappointment, and that's okay to acknowledge. But I also think, yes, the way in which they did it was incredibly impressive, and people who don't know curling won't recognize that. They won't recognize how impressive it was. I think like you said, you start 1-3, and obviously the knock on Rachel has been that she can't get it done at the Olympics. She's missed the playoffs both times she's been there. And, you know, in 2018, it was similar. She was the favorite going in. She was the defending world champion. That was a soft field, too. Like, there wasn't that many great teams in that field. Like, Anna Hasselborg won as a team that had been together for 2 years. Eunjung Kim came second, you know, out of nowhere. Like, it wasn't a great Olympics field, and she bombed out hard. When she goes 1-3, I don't think she's on social media and seeing all the bullshit people are saying about her, but she's very aware of what people are going to be saying and thinking about her, and managing her own ghosts in that regard. And I would also say too, like, one thing that curlers were kind of talking about, and this sort of flew under the radar, but she made the mixed doubles trials final back when in 2025, when Joss and Brett won the spot. And she was bad in that game, like outright bad. And that, I was starting to hear a bit of that talk too, of like, the Olympics are so in her head, like she can't even be good in the mixed doubles final, you know, or whatever. So like, there's all this talk out there about all that. So to start 1-3, and not only start 1-3, but like, if you had started 1-3 and you lose to Tirinzoni, which was one of the three losses, but you also lose to Hasselborg, you lose to Korea, you go, okay, well, they lost to the top three teams in the field. It is what it is. But two of their losses were to Great Britain and the USA. Now, obviously, the USA ended up having a great tournament, but coming into the Olympics, you're like, oh, well, those are tap-ins. Rachel never loses to those teams. To start 1-3, basically play 5 must-win games in a row to make the playoffs. And then I think they just kind of ran out of gas in the semi. They just weren't very good in the semi kind of period. Anna, I think, got a little bit, not lucky, because Anna was very, very good last week, but like a little bit in the sense that like that's maybe the weakest overall version of Rachel Homan you could get in an Olympic semifinal. But then to rebound from that and play your best game of the whole Olympics in the bronze medal game, I think it's super impressive. I think it's going to maybe quiet some of the public voices. I also think it maybe quiets some of the voices in Rachel's head. And I think it sets her up really well for the next quad. But yeah, overall, for me, it was extremely impressive. I hope the narrative remains that it was impressive and not just, well, she won a bronze and probably should have won gold, you know?
What if you could learn more about your health in under an hour? The Pronuvo Whole Body Scan gives you a comprehensive look at your health, screening for over 500 conditions, including many solid tumors as early as stage one. High-quality imaging, no radiation, no contrast. Book your scan today at Pronuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com. Gain clarity, confidence, and peace of mind with Pronuvo. Invest in your health today. Visit Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
This is the new Weight Watchers, built for real life and real results, no matter what mode you're in. Maddie went all in for her big day and lost 33 pounds. Emily lost 85 pounds and hit her goal while still living her life.
Weight Watchers gave me the tools and I feel amazing.
Join the millions of members and lose weight with the number one doctor-recommended weight loss program. Lose more at WeightWatchers.com.
At 6 months, participants in a clinical trial of Weight Watchers program lost an average of 12 pounds.
I think, 100%. Yeah, 100%. I think if you look at both her and Bruce Mowat, I think it puts things into perspective a little bit sometimes. I think obviously the Olympics is the most important event in the whole sport, right? Like, I don't think anyone's going to dispute that. And you, that's the one you want to win, is the one you want to sort of build toward and win. But at the end of the day, it's just an event like any other, and you really don't know what's going to happen. You could be the world number one, you could be a triple time world champion, and you could just, it could not be your week, and you can, could completely bottom out. And I think that's sort of the small sample size effect here that I think some people really need to wrap their heads around a little bit sometimes, where it's like, okay, like Rachel, there's a bit of a history there. Like, so we can talk about that a little bit, and that's a thing, but it is still just on any given week, you just don't really know. And I think that really applies to Anne Hasselberg, who, you know, on the world, for whatever reason, at the world championship scenes, he hasn't been able to do much, but for some reason when the Olympics comes on, and there she is with two gold medals now. So,
well, and I think it worked in Anna's favor, because it's the same conversation with Silvana and Alina. Like, they didn't have a medal either.
Yep.
So it was like, you know, Rachel's been to two Olympics before this and bombed out at both. Alina's been to three and bombed out at three of them. Silvana's also basically said she's retiring. So you have the pressure of Silvana's last Olympics. I've also heard rumors maybe Alina's retiring. So wow. I don't know. I mean, that's all speculation, of course. But let's, even if it's not her last Olympics, she doesn't have a medal either. So Anna, they played really well, but also kind of ended up in this good spot where it's sort of like, yeah, well, you know, whatever, like, I don't, you know, it is what it is. We've already got a gold and a bronze. I think especially in the gold medal game too, because there is some element of like, oh, I lose and then I have the complete set, like Nicodine. Yeah. I've got a gold, a silver, and a bronze.
I must obviously have them all.
Yeah, obviously you'd rather have two golds, but I think, yeah, there's some element there in the gold medal game of like, we've already won this game before. Yeah. Like, it's not, it genuinely isn't the end of the world for them. So yeah, and it's also funny because Anna was horrible all year. I mean, I can say that out loud now. I mean, probably her worst tour season. It was certainly her worst tour season of this quad, but maybe even of the last decade. Like, they lost the Swedish women's spot to Vrano. That was fully based on points.
Yeah.
So it was just who had the most points this year. They basically had a head-to-head game in Steinbach at the Slam that pretty much decided it. Anna bombed out there. They didn't make the playoffs. Isabella did, and that's what got them to the Worlds. Like, they were outright bad this year. And then I think it was both, they know how to play well at the Olympics, they've proven that, but also they were in this sort of lucky position of their two major rivals both had these storylines sort of working against them.
100%. A couple more here before we let you go, John. Obviously, we're going to talk Breyer for a minute. But before we talk Breyer, we're talking retirements. A big one today, friend of yours, friend of mine, Reed Carruthers calling it quits. First off, obviously, quick thoughts on Ram and his career. Super well-liked guy. I loved having a beer or two with Rama. But two, how different is this year's Breyer field going to look to next year because of retirements?
Ooh, good question. Ram, yeah, great guy. Said it in a tweet. I think he'll be one of the more sort of underrated players. I've kind of described this as like Canada's sort of golden generation. I mean, yeah, we've always had good skips, like Stoughton and Martin and Howard were all of a similar age. And then you know, before them, you had Pat Ryan and Rick Folk and Randy Ferbey, and they were all kind of a similar age. And, you know, there's been these like, and Al Hackner's in there too, yeah. And like, and Ed Wernick, like you've had these groups of like skips that were very good, but this sort of generation of players kind of born between like 1977 and 1990, let's say, is incredible, both at the skip position, but all over the place. You know, I mean, you look at, yeah, Mike McEwen's whole team, you look at Brad Jacobs and the Harndins, you look at obviously Gushu, Ryan Fry. There's been Dunny is a little younger, but you know, he's sort of in the mix there too. Like there's just been this really, really strong generation of players. And I think Reed gets lost in that shuffle a little bit. I think if Reed played at a different time, he, first of all, might have had a little bit more success on the national stage. I mean, he won a Worlds, but that was as a second. I mean, in his later career as a back end player. But also, yeah, like you said, just a good guy, contributes a lot to the sport. He does so much work with junior clinics at the slams. He runs a clinic at basically every slam, and he's worked with curlers all across the world. He's turned into one of the sport's best coaches. I think he's gonna, you know, he's gonna have a long tail here as a coach. Like we haven't seen the last of him, but yeah, I hope he gets remembered a little bit more. I mean, you're a world champion, that's forever. But as far as success as a skip, you didn't have maybe the success you would want. Never made a Brier final, you know, never made a trials final, that kind of thing. But I do think, one of the great players of this generation. And as you say, good guy. As far as next year, it's interesting, man. I think the retirements are going to be less than people think. I think there's a couple reasons for that. I think the first is that Brad Jacobs proved that you don't have to build a team for a quad. You know, they threw Brendan Botcher off the throne halfway through, and turned out that didn't matter. They're the Olympic champions. So, and basically every team changed in this quad. Like if you think about the start of this quad, right? Like Mike McEwen was playing with Ryan Fry and Brent Lang and John Buick.
Oh, yes, that's right. Yes.
Like that was the start of this quad. Yep. By the end of this quad, Fry and Lang were retired. John Buick is playing with three guys from I don't know where. And Mike's had a bunch of success out of Saskatchewan. So like, you know, what a weird, it's just been a very strange quad as far as like basically every major team had a change. You know, Gushu turfed EJ, Dunstone turfed BJ, blah blah blah. Like, so it's been proven you don't really need to start from the beginning of the quad in order to win. You can do that, but you don't have to. So I think that's opened the door for guys to maybe play like a year or two after. Like for example, like I don't think Mark and Ben are done. I think they will be done. I don't think they're going to play the next Olympics, but are they going to ride this golden wave? For sure they are. And like, this hasn't been officially announced yet, but it's coming out soon, and it's an open secret, so I can say it. But one thing that's also working in curler's favor is next year, because of the Rock League schedule, all five slams are before Christmas. So we've never seen that before. It's always been three slams before Christmas, one in January, one in April. And then obviously this year, because of the Olympics and because of Rock League in April, there was four before Christmas, one in January. Next year, with Rock League being in January and February, it's all five slams before Christmas. So a guy like Ben and Mark can look at the schedule and say, okay, I'm going to have a bye back to the Brier, like whether they win or they get a wild card, they'll be back at the Brier next year, no matter what. So for them, it's sort of, and I don't think either of them have interest in playing Rock League. So I think what you'll see is guys like them look at it and they go, okay, obviously I'll train a little bit in the summer, but I don't have to go as hard as I used to, cause I'm on the retirement plan or whatever.
Yeah.
I can go play five slams. No problem. I'm taking weeks away from my family for 3 months, basically. Then I can be home for 2 months in January and February when Rock League is going on, and I can go to my kids' hockey game and I can coach my daughter's softball team and do all that. Then I'll show up to the Brier and that that'll be my last kick at the can. And yeah, and maybe along the way, I get a way bigger sponsor this year because I just won the gold medal and I win a bunch more money at the slams. And then I get to retire and I get to keep it all.
Right.
That's the other thing too, right? Often these guys aren't cashing checks year to year because they're rolling the money over into the next season. Like they'll pay themselves out a little bit, but it's not, you know, whereas if you're about to retire, you go, give me a quarter of that shit. I'm out of here.
Yeah.
So I think the retirements are going to be less than people are thinking. I think obviously we know Brad Gaju's stepping away. We know EJ Herndon is stepping away. EJ feels like the type of guy. Is he going to get coaxed back? It kind of feels like it to me. Yeah, maybe John not Morris, next year. Yeah, maybe not next year, but year two or three of the quad. Is EJ going to get coaxed back? I could see that for sure. And then, yeah, it's like, you know, Mark Nichols, I think if he had the right team, he'll keep playing. I think Mike McEwen wants to keep playing. I think John Epping wants to keep playing. So I think it's going to be a lot less than people think, for sure.
Love to hear it.
Bit of a random question. Sure. Was having a conversation with friend of the show, Jacques Cartier, on online.
Mm-hmm.
And we got into a weird discussion about a tournament. If a tournament were held of a team of skips, a team of thirds, a team of seconds, and a team of leads. Put your bias for being a lead aside. If you had a four-team tournament with those four teams, which team do you think would win and why?
Thirds, easily.
Yeah. Yeah.
thirds are the best players in the world. I don't know why people don't know that, but yeah.
I would like to see a team of skips just completely.
For sure. It's like, you also have to ask the question, like, does the team of skips get a year, right? Because we saw the team of skips with Carrie Anderson, and then Shannon and Brianne had to teach themselves how to sweep. And then within a year, they were two of the best sweepers in the women's game. But if you're just saying tomorrow, it's Brad Jacobs, Matt Dunstone, Brad Gaju, and Mike McEwen. Who the fuck is sweeping on that team?
I mean, it's just funny because those are the four people I thought of, and that's not
it. Yeah, complete. I mean, that's just a complete disaster. Brad Jacobs is an okay sweeper. The other three are horrible. So with the thirds, it's not only that you're getting better shot making, most likely, but you're also getting better sweeping. Because even let's just say you even just took the thirds from those teams. I mean, if I could pick any thirds, you know, if you give me Grant Hardy, Oscar Erickson, Mark Kennedy, you know, it's over. But even if you took the four thirds from those teams, so Colton Lott, Mark Kennedy, Colton Flash, and Mark Nichols. Nichols throws the brick, no problem.
Yeah.
You know, Mark Kennedy probably throws third, Flash throws second or lead, doesn't really matter, and Colton Lott throws second or lead, and then you've got the two Coltons sweeping, dynamite.
Yeah.
You got Mark Kennedy, who's already proven he's probably the best third on the planet right this second, and then you got Mark Nichols throwing last. I mean, it's not even a contest, in my opinion.
No, I absolutely love it. It was actually funny. Flash was out at our men's night on Monday. It was fun seeing him out on the ice with some of his buddies. But
nice.
Right before we let you go here, John, again, thanks so much for coming on with us.
Oh, of course. Always, anytime.
Despite my technical, you know, falling apart and being starstruck at the beginning, you know. we'll talk Breyer real quick here as it is just around the corner. Just kind of your thoughts on, like, I love the Olympic Breyers because even though the Scotties ended up being shock, Joel and I were talking, we're like, we want to see craziness. We want to see an obscure winner. I hope we see that with a Breyer, but I'd like to know your pick and why is it Kelly Knapp?
Brennan Jones is going to have the tournament of his life, man. I didn't even say that to be rude. Like, I think they're a good team. I wish they played more. Like, there's lots of teams like that. Like, it's kind of funny. Like, this is totally off topic, but you know, like, I think of the U.S. women right now, like, that program is in real trouble. Especially if some of them retire, which has been rumored, or like Corey's only going to play mixed doubles or whatever. But like, they have that with Elizabeth Cousins, very good team. USA Curling is trying to like give them money and make them be high performance curlers. And they're like, no, we don't want to. we're going to keep playing like five events a year. If Tab and Tara retire, we're probably going to win anyway. So no, we don't want to. And that's kind of what Kelly Knapp does. And I just feel bad because I think they are actually a pretty good team and I wish they played a little more. Same thing goes for BCAL. Braden Calvert, I would also say, is in that boat too. But anyway, it's hard to imagine this thing not going chalk. I mean, I know that Jacobs is coming off of the Olympics and they're going to obviously be tired and everything, but also like,
and hungover.
Didn't Gushue win the last one after coming off the Olympics?
He did. Yeah. Three. Gushue won won it with three. So the precedent is there. I think they're going to be really good. I think they're going to be motivated. Again, you want to talk about guys like having a chip on their shoulder or whatever. I'll tell you this for free, because I was in the building in Saskatoon. There's going to be guys at this Brier who will be very excited to be the team that retires Brad Gushue. And Brad Jacobs would be very high on that list. I don't think there's a ton of love lost between the Brads. Not that they don't like each other, but I think there's, you know, I think they respect each other, but they're not friends. So I think there's sort of a little bit of an added incentive this year for teams, to say, I want to be the guy that put the final nail in the coffin for Brad Gushue's career. So I think that'll be very motivating for them.
Is wrestling, an old wrestling thing is you do not win your last match and you definitely don't win the big match at home. So
yes.
Yeah.
Exactly. Gushue's got to lose this thing, right?
Yeah, exactly. Someone got mad at me because when Brad lost to John Schuster in Saskatoon, I said like an aging prize fighter, he goes out on his back. And then people got mad at me online about that. But I was like, but that is just how it goes. Usually, 100%. Usually get to retire on top. I wasn't trying to be rude. I was trying to make an interesting call.
You put someone over on the way out. That's how it goes.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I mean, don't get me wrong. It would be amazing for the sport if he goes out in St. John's and wins it, or even just makes the final. Like if you could have a Jacobs Gushue final in St. John's. Jacobs has that history of the slam last year, getting booed by the crowd and riling them up. Someone asked me about that on Twitter today. And I kind of think like Jacobs will be received well because they just won a gold medal for Canada. Right. So during the round robin, all that, you know, you're not going to get, I don't think, the type of atmosphere you got at the slam, but I think you get those two teams in the final. Jacobs is getting booed for sure.
Oh yeah.
It would hopefully be
incredible.
Yeah, it would be electric. So or even just a playoff game. But I think, I think it is hard to imagine. Like you got your top four teams there, Jacobs, Gushue, Dunstone, McEwen. For me, they're a clear step ahead of the field. Will there be teams that play well? Of course there will be, right? You know, last year we saw Sam Moybrook play super well. Yep. Even Thomas Scoffin from the Yukon had a very, very nice year last year. So I think, you know, I like Jaden King from Ontario. I think he's a good player. Kevin Cooey kind of had a little bit of the Cooey magic at the trials. He sort of fell apart by the end, but also like this whole Brier field on paper is not that good. I mean, without Epping there, you know, you're looking at, and the pools are evenly divided. It's like Jacobs and Gushue are in one pool and then Dunstone and McEwen are in another pool. So it's not like one pool sort of stacked where, oh shit, they're all going to beat the hell out of each other. And the other pool is kind of soft. It's like, both pools should be pretty winnable for those four teams. And then you get into the playoffs. And so, I it's hard for me to imagine it won't be kind of those four. Maybe one of them gets upset. Like, I think I like Braden Calvert a lot too. He's such a good player. I think Cooey, Calvert, King, they could all be in the mix at the end of the week, but it's hard not to imagine a final involving, and I would honestly put Mike McEwen on a step below the top three. It's hard not to imagine. And again, Gushue hasn't been good either. Yeah. Like Jacobs and Dunstone are on a tier by themselves. It's just Gushue has the sentimental. He's also had time to rest.
Yes.
Right. Like he's talked about his injuries and everything. So he's had a few months off. He's been able to rest. So is there a Cinderella story in the offing? Maybe. But it's hard not to imagine a final that involves some combination of those four teams. And I think as of right now, it's most likely going to be Jacobs Dunstone again, from what I see.
I would love to see it. John, thank you again for A, coming on, and B, once again, proving our theory that everything is wrestling.
Everything is always wrestling, my friend. That is for sure true. Thank you guys so much for having me. Always a pleasure to do this.